If you're ever in San Jose, California, check out Rosicrucian Park. Covering a city block, it's hard to miss. Its centerpiece is an Egyptian museum full of antiquities. Egyptian-style architecture abounds, so of course there are pyramids. One, festooned with esoteric symbols, marks the resting place of the park's creator, Harvey Spencer Lewis. It's a secret society theme park right in the middle of Silicon Valley. There's even a planetarium, and the headquarters of the society behind it all, the ancient and mystical order of the Rosicrucis, or Rosy Cross, or just AMARC for short. So how did it get there? If you glance through old comics or pulp magazines like Amazing Stories, Popular Science, or Mechanics Illustrated, you're bound to come across AMARC ads offering to reveal ancient wisdom, the suppressed knowledge of the ages, the secret method for the mastery of life, and the psychic power of attraction. Whether you suffer from depression or just the vague feeling that there's something horribly wrong with the world, Rosicrucianism offers a cure. The secrets entrusted to a few could be yours, plus handy skills like levitation and telepathy, all for a low, low cost in easy lessons. Simply put, the mystical order's grand imperator, H. Spencer Lewis, turned it into a mass marketing empire, and it's still going. Spencer Lewis also pioneered talk radio and invented things like the cosmic ray coincidence counter and the Luxotone, a device that turns sounds into colors. Lewis built his own empire on much older foundations, which he reinvented for the 20th century. His Order of the Rosy Cross had its immediate roots in French Rosicrucian orders that appeared in the 1880s. They, in turn, drew inspiration from 18th century Rosicrucian societies that traced their origins to the 17th century and original Rosicrucians. So what exactly was Rosicrucianism? Well, maybe everything, maybe nothing. Confused? Hang on, we're just getting started. Lewis's Rosicrucian adventure started with a vision. In the spring of 1908, then a 25-year-old struggling artist, Lewis claimed to have had a profound mystical experience. A spirit guide instructed him to journey east and seek out the Rosicrucians. The following summer, Lewis said he accompanied his father, Aaron Lewis, on a business trip to Paris. That started the young man on a journey that ended in the ancient city of Toulouse. The city had been a hotbed of the medieval Cathar heresy, which had challenged the Roman Catholic Church in the Middle Ages. I tell that story elsewhere. Coincidentally or not, Toulouse remained a magnet for esoteric activity. And it's there, Lewis said, in an old chateau near the Garonne River, that a man named Count du Belcastel-Lin initiated him into the Rosicrucian mysteries. The young American was given free access to the order's library and archives. He made notes and copied whatever he wished. But there was a catch. The Rosicrucians' mission for Lewis was to restore true Rosicrucianism to America, which he did, starting in New York. While he accepted the challenge, the masters, in their mysterious way, decreed he couldn't begin until 1915. Another vision later directed Lewis to California, where he restored Rosicrucianism to its new home in San Jose in 1927. That, in a nutshell, is Lewis's version of the founding of the ancient and mystical order of the Rosy Cross. How much of it is true is another matter. The Canadian-born esoteric scholar Manly P. Hall had his doubts. Hall claimed that the history of Rosicrucianism was intensely complicated by misrepresentation and impostures, and he considered H. Spencer Lewis a big part of the problem. A big question mark hangs over Lewis's 1909 pilgrimage to France. There's no proof it ever happened, at least as Lewis described. For instance, there's no documentary evidence of Lewis or his father leaving or entering the United States that year. Also, Lewis had taken an interest in the mystical as early as 1903, when he joined the New York Institute for Psychical Research. That group specialized in investigating what we'd now call paranormal phenomena. In 1915, the year he launched the Rosicrucian Order, the New York State Census shows Lewis as an advertising salesman. Subsequent events surrounding Lewis exude a distinct odor of flimflammery. In his September 1918 draft registration, Lewis lists himself as manager of something called the Order Rosae Crucis. Some months earlier, he'd purchased the old Lily Langtree mansion on West 23rd Street. Where did he get the money? That's probably answered by a police raid on the mansion and Lewis's arrest in June 1918. He was charged with fraudulently selling thousands of dollars of bond certificates based on the claim that his order was a recognized branch of a worldwide institution devoted to the study of the occult. New York State rejected his application to incorporate the ancient and mystical order as an organization engaged in the analysis of all ancient, medieval, and modern religions, philosophy, and moral codes. That setback probably prompted his move to California. By 1920, he was living in San Francisco as a scientific lecturer. As mentioned, Lewis's new outfit was an offshoot of a French secret society dubbed the Kabbalistic Order of the Rosy Cross. It was formed in 1888 by a group of French occultists, including Gerard Ancaus, better known as Papus. Mixed up in this French society was another colorful character named Josephine Peladon. Peladon broke away and formed his own Rosicrucian order a few years later. The avowed purpose of Josephine Peladon's Rosicrucians was the study of the occult magic of the ancient East, a detail that suggests a connection between Peladon's and Lewis's orders is that both use the title of Imperator for their leader. But if Lewis never went to France, how could he have been ordained by Peladon or anyone else? But Lewis's father, Aaron Lewis, did make a trip to France in 1914, that is, 5 years after son Spencer's version of events. Aaron Lewis was a handwriting expert and genealogist who made a business of locating and authenticating old documents. So, did Dad go to France to dig up something for his son? In December 1914, right after his father's return, Lewis took his first step towards forming the ancient and mystical order of the Rosy Cross. He simply ran a personal ad in the New York Herald newspaper, seeking contact with anyone interested in Rosicrucianism. By February 1915, he'd managed to recruit 9 members, including his wife. But the formal initiation ceremony didn't take place until April Fool's Day. So you've got to wonder why he picked that of all days. Manly P. Hall isn't the only one to question Lewis's bona fides. Lewis's biggest critic was his rival for Supreme Rosicrucian in America, Reuben Swinburne Clymer. A crusader for what we'd now call alternative medicine, Clymer joined an American society called the Fraternitas Rosae Crucis, or FRC, in 1897. He regarded Lewis as an interloper and imposter. Clymer became Grand Master of the Fraternitas Rosae Crucis in 1905. He also operated something called the Church of Illumination and the Philosophical Publishing Company. All of these ventures were dedicated to the teaching of Clymer's guru and the original founder of the FRC, Pascal Beverly Randolph. Randolph's a fascinating, if little-known figure in American history. He boasted a friendship with Abraham Lincoln and was an outspoken abolitionist. Clymer's glowing biography of Randolph even claimed that Lincoln was a member of his Rosicrucian order, along with French Emperor Napoleon III and the Freemason Confederate General Albert Pike. Of course, in the secret society universe, truth often takes a backseat to mythology. Pascal Randolph was a mixed-race gentleman of color who used mysticism to negotiate the delicate racial politics of the day. As a sailor, he'd collected bits and pieces of various esoteric doctrines and cobbled them together into something he called erotic alchemy. He formed the Fraternitas Rosicrucis in 1858 and died mysteriously in 1875, probably murdered by a jealous husband. Naturally, Randolph claimed his order descended from an earlier one, the Hermetic Brotherhood of Light, which, in turn, claimed descent from the 18th century Fratres Lucis, Brothers of Light, who traced their origins to an earlier German bunch of Rosicrucians. And there are still more Rosicrucian orders floating around, like the London-based Societas Rosicruciana in Anglia, which appeared in 1865. Some of its members, all Freemasons, later formed the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn. In Germany, the Ordo Templi Orientis, the Eastern Templars, or OTO, also claimed to represent Rosicrucianism. A member of both societies was the most famous occultist of the modern era, Aleister Crowley. Rosicrucianism, like Freemasonry, was a generic label, not a brand name. Secret societies operate under a kind of apostolic succession. The legitimacy of a new group is based largely on its pedigree of its ancestors. So Lewis claimed initiation into a French order, which claimed descent from a line of still earlier Rosicrucians. Likewise, Clymer was an initiate of Randolph who claimed his own initiations, and so on and so on. Add to this the tendency of one society to split into two or three, and you end up with something like a huge family feud with siblings and half-siblings all squabbling over inheritance. In the absence of real proof, one way to boost your legitimacy is to impugn your rivals. That's what R. Swinburne Clymer did. He was the first to build an estate, Beverly Hall, and festoon it with pyramids. Clymer sneered at Lewis for prostituting sacred doctrines through magazine ads and radio broadcasts. He even insinuated that Lewis and Amort practiced sex magic. Since I'm sure you're curious, that's basically the channeling of sexual energy to achieve magical ends. It naturally conjures up images of orgies. Clymer's accusation was curious because one man who unquestionably did practice sex magic was his hero, Pascal Randolph. Clymer also pointed out Lewis's connection to the notorious sex magician, Aleister Crowley. True, both Crowley and Lewis were linked through the Ordo Templi Orientis, but that doesn't make them friends or allies. When Crowley later took control over the OTO, he tried to force Lewis to acknowledge his authority. Lewis refused. The Clymer-Lewis feud reached its peak during the 1930s. In 1934, Lewis spearheaded the creation of the Universal Federation of Initiatic Orders and Societies, known by its French acronym as FUDOSI. It united AMORC with 14 other secret societies. They pledged common effort to protect sacred liturgies, rites, and doctrines from being profaned by clandestine organizations, that is, organizations like Clymer's. No less than six orders of FUDOSI had Rosicrucian or Rose Cross in their name. Not to be outdone, Reuben Clymer formed the rival FUDOFSI, the Universal Federation of Initiatic Orders, Fraternities, and Societies. Half of its 10 members also claimed Rosicrucian pedigrees. H. Spencer Lewis suddenly died in 1939. That surely gave some satisfaction to Clymer, who hung onto his mortal coil for another 27 years. But he never attained Lewis's notoriety or financial success. I'm sure you're still wondering what the whole Rosicrucian thing was about. What's the ism in Rosicrucianism? Again, it's about everything and nothing. Take the rose and the cross. Clearly they're symbols, but of what? The rose can be red or white or golden. From a Christian esoteric standpoint, the cross is the cross, the rose is a symbolic stand-in for Christ, or divine grace, or salvation. But most Rosicrucians weren't Christian in any usual sense. Lewis, for instance, proclaimed that AMORC was not a religious organization, and he said the rose cross symbol predated Christianity. To an occult practitioner, the same rose might mean light, wisdom, secrecy, redemption, the divine soul, or even the philosopher's stone of alchemy. In sex magic, the rose and cross are symbols for the female and male genitals, regeneration, or sexual ecstasy. In other words, it pretty much means whatever you want it to mean. Rosicrucians all like to claim that they possess the keys to wisdom handed down from ancient times. But what wisdom? Well, you had to be initiated, or pay, to find out. To get a better handle on Rosicrucianism, let's go back to where it first became visible, 17th century Central Europe. This was a Europe 100 years into the Reformation, and still bitterly divided by religious hatred. The biggest and most destructive religious conflict, the 30 Years' War, was just around the corner. According to secret society's historian Idris Shah, the Rosicrucian ball first got rolling in 1597. Rumors spread of a mysterious alchemist wandering the continent, drumming up recruits for a society to carry out alchemical researches. 8 years later, a so-called Rosicrucian constitution surfaced in Germany, but quickly vanished. Then, in 1614, the first of two Rosicrucian manifestos appeared in Germany. Titled the Fama Fraternitatis, the famous fraternity, it was an appendage to a bigger work titled The General Reformation of the World. A year later came a second Rosicrucian manifesto. It was equally brief and equally anonymous, the Confessio Fraternitatis, or the Testament. The manifestos told the story of Christian Rosenkreuz, i.e. Christian Rose Cross, a German monk who traveled to the Holy Land around 1400. A curious sort, he encountered, what else, a secret society of wise men in Damascus. Idris Shah speculated that there may have been a smidge of truth in the story. According to Shah, a 12th century Sufi mystic named Abdulkader al-Gilani formed an Arabic school of Illuminati in Baghdad. After Baghdad's destruction by the Mongols in 1258, survivors of his order took refuge in Damascus. Sufi mystic Gilani was known to his followers as the Rose. His secret doctrine was called the Path of the Rose, or the Sabil al-Warda. Curiously, the slightly altered phrase Salib al-Warda means Cross of the Rose. Regardless, Rosenkreuz had picked a bad time to visit Damascus. In 1400, the conqueror Tamerlane sacked and burned the city and built a massive tower of severed heads to commemorate it. Nevertheless, Rosenkreuz supposedly soaked up the secret knowledge of the East and received initiation. He next traveled to Egypt, then to Morocco, to Spain, and finally back to Germany. Much of what Rosenkreuz supposedly learned smacks of Gnosticism and Hermeticism. Gnosticism, of course, is the notion that spiritual enlightenment and salvation comes through knowledge. Hermeticism is a means to acquire that knowledge through alchemy, astrology, and theurgy, the invocation of gods and spirits, what some might describe as black magic. Back home, Rosenkreuz decided the time wasn't right to reveal his knowledge. He formed a secret society to conceal it. The society consisted of seven carefully selected acolytes. They swore vows of secrecy and celibacy. Rosenkreuz commanded that they would outwardly observe the religions of their home countries to avoid drawing attention. That was called the Doctrine of Concealment. Curiously, other secret societies, like the medieval Islamic assassins, practiced something very similar. Each initiate picked a successor, who picked another, and so on and so on. The brothers claimed to feel no hunger or thirst, and could command spirits and make themselves invisible. Rosenkreuz reportedly died in 1484 at the ripe age of 106. He was buried in a secret tomb. His tiny brotherhood carried on invisibly for 120 years until 1604, when one of them opened Rosenkreuz's tomb. Inside, strange inscriptions and a manuscript in golden letters were supposedly found. The time was apparently right, and someone set to writing those manifestos. Their basic purpose was to reveal the existence of the Rosicrucian Society, not its secrets, and to recruit new members for the work to come. Spencer Lewis used much the same approach when he ran that personal ad in 1914. It won't come as a surprise that there's absolutely no evidence that Christian Rosenkreuz ever existed, or his society. Later Rosicrucians were divided on whether Rosenkreuz was a real person or just another allegory. Some see the model for Rosenkreuz in the Swiss alchemist Paracelsus, who lived from 1493 to 1541. Others believe the Rosenkreuz story is a disguised reference to Italian ex-monk and wandering mystic Giordano Bruno. The Inquisition burned Bruno as a heretic in 1600. Widely regarded as a martyr for free thought, Bruno was an occultist and well-versed in Arab astrology, the Kabbalah, and Hermetic doctrines. Bruno got into trouble for denying the divinity of Christ, the virginity of Mary, and all the sacraments. If that makes him sound like a Cathar heretic, some have argued that's exactly what he was. And some have argued that Rosicrucianism was just a repackaging of Cathar beliefs. Bruno spent some time in England, where he joined a secret society dubbed the Invisible College. Its alleged members included Sir Francis Bacon and Elizabeth I's court sorcerer, John Dee. Even William Shakespeare gets roped in. There's even a theory that some of his plays contain hidden Rosicrucian messages. The same is claimed for Edmund Spenser's allegorical The Faerie Queen, which appeared just prior to 1600. A Rosicrucian society surfaced in London during the 1640s. One member was the occultist physician Robert Flood. Another was the antiquarian, alchemist, and Freemason Elias Ashmole. Ashmole and several other Rosicrucians later founded the vaunted Royal Society. Yet another theory holds that Rosicrucianism sprang from radical Protestantism. Its second manifesto, the Confessio, is strongly anti-Catholic. It also prophesizes a sweeping revolution in Europe, wiping the slate clean. It proclaimed that the Rosicrucians' goal wasn't to fix society, but to destroy it in order to build a new and better one. The Confessio also echoes ideas in alchemy and hermeticism. Today, we usually identify alchemy with turning lead into gold. But for a real alchemist, that was a parlor trick. And the Rosicrucian manifestos denounced it. The real goal of alchemy was the transmutation of base humanity into its true divine nature. This theme of inner transformation features in a third Rosicrucian work, The Chemical Wedding of Christian Rosenkreuz, which appeared in Germany in 1616. It was longer and different than the earlier manifestos. Allegedly written by Christian Rosenkreuz himself, Chemical Wedding revolves around the marriage of a fabulous king and queen. Like the biblical creation, the story lasts 7 days. It involves a spiritual quest, death, and resurrection. In the story, everyone ritually dresses in white and red, which are the colors of two other important secret orders, the medieval Knights Templar and the Persian Assassins. There's also a Father of Light, which echoes Gnostic and Cathar cosmology, and a weighing of souls that smacks of ancient Egyptian rites. That's led to further speculation that Rosicrucianism is just a reworking of one or more of the ancient mystery cults. A radical German Lutheran named Johannes Valentinus Andreae later claimed authorship of Chemical Wedding as a literary joke or spoof. His authorship has been widely accepted, but it's another claim that doesn't stand up to scrutiny. First, Chemical Wedding bears no resemblance to Andreae's other known works. Andreae claims to have written it in 1602 when he was 17 years old. But since the 1616 Chemical Wedding references the earlier manifestos published a decade later, it can't be the same. And no copy of the 1602 version survives. Also, Andreae was a critic of the Rosicrucians and belonged to rival secret societies such as the Fraternitas Christi and the Blue Cross. Despite this mystery, or because of it, the Rosicrucian manifestos aroused intense interest and speculation. How many recruits they collected is impossible to say. In Paris, in 1623, posters mysteriously popped up proclaiming the presence of the Rosicrucians and again solicited the worthy to apply. But apply where? To whom? It's probably no coincidence that Rosicrucianism surfaced around the same time as early Masonic lodges. In the centuries to follow, Rosicrucianism and Freemasonry were talked about in the same breath, and most Rosicrucians would start out as Masons. Rosicrucian influence also manifested in esoteric branches of Christianity. Recall that H. Spencer Lewis was supposedly charged with restoring Rosicrucianism to America. Arguably, Rosicrucianism first appeared in Pennsylvania in 1694 with the arrival of German mystic Johannes Kelpius. North of Philadelphia, not far from where Reuben Clymer later built his headquarters, Kelpius formed a small religious order dubbed the Society of the Woman in the Wilderness. That was a reference to the Book of Revelation, to which Kelpius attached great importance. Kelpius and his monks lived lives of poverty and chastity, rather like the Cathars leaders, the so-called perfects. Kelpius and his followers dabbled in astrology, alchemy, and ritual magic. They held a celebration on June 23rd, St. John's Eve, to coincide with the summer solstice. Kelpius died in 1708, and his society faded. But its influence survived in a later sect that sprang up in nearby Lancaster County. This was the Ephrata community. Ephrata spun off yet another secret society, the Zionitic Brotherhood. They went in for a 40-day initiation fueled by psychedelic mushrooms. Back in Germany, another influenced by Rosicrucian beliefs was Baron Karl von Eckartshausen. He was a Catholic mystic who wrote the allegorical The Cloud Upon the Sanctuary, an influential work of Christian or pseudo-Christian mysticism. In it, Eckartshausen described an invisible church and a society of the elect who would bring about a universal theocratic republic. And guess what? Eckartshausen was also a member of the Bavarian Illuminati, a secret society founded in the late 18th century. Other 18th century figures who claimed allegiance to Rosicrucianism included the infamous occultist, Freemason, and political intriguer Count Giuseppe Cagliostro, and his fellow occult adventurer, the Count de Saint-Germain. Saint-Germain claimed to be hundreds of years old. That sparked rumors he was really Christian Rosenkreutz in disguise. Rosicrucian themes also run through the mystical philosophy of the Swedish mystic Emanuel Swedenborg and English poet and painter William Blake. Traces can also be found in the political philosophy of 18th century German Adam Weishaupt, the mastermind behind the Bavarian Illuminati. Rosicrucianism was like a stain that subtly penetrated and tinted everything it touched. Rosicrucianism wasn't confined to Christian Europe. something similar can be seen in a religious schism that rocked Jewish communities in the 17th and 18th centuries. In Eastern Europe and in the Middle East, war, rebellion, and massacres led many Jews to pray for the arrival of the Messiah, who would usher in a new world order of universal peace. In 1648, a 22-year-old rabbi and Kabbalist from the Ottoman Empire, Sabbatai Zevi, proclaimed himself the Messiah. He declared all religious laws and observances null and void. Zevi openly flaunted them and encouraged his followers to do the same. He also claimed that he didn't need to eat or drink. Naturally, the Orthodox rabbinate didn't look kindly on this and excommunicated him. For most of the 1650s, Zevi wandered the Balkans, still attracting thousands of followers. By 1665, Zevi's influence had spread to Western Jewish centers like Frankfurt and Amsterdam. Some rabbis began to accept that he might be the real thing. But in 1666, Ottoman authorities arrested Zevi and gave him a choice. Either he dropped the Messiah business and converted to Islam, or they'd chop his head off. He promptly converted and urged devotees to follow suit. His justification that since all religions are equally bogus, it didn't matter which one you outwardly observed. Sound familiar? One can imagine Christian Rosenkreutz or assassin leader Hassan al-Sabah saying exactly the same. Zevi's apostasy caused huge disappointment, but some followers doggedly clung to him. They were labeled Sabbateans and became a secretive, persecuted heresy within Judaism. Zevi died in 1676, but Sabbateanism lived on, side by side with Rosicrucianism. Later, in 1755, in Poland, one of those Sabbateans, Jakub Frank, proclaimed himself the reincarnation of Zevi and King David. Frank preached rejection of religious law and the embracing of sensuality and sin for mystical redemption and enlightenment. He encouraged apostasy and led tens of thousands of Jews into the arms of the Catholic Church. More to the point, Frank acknowledged Rosicrucian influence. So Rosicrucianism was never a movement or a secret society per se. It was an idea, arguably a philosophy, of universal spiritual illumination and liberation, led by an initiated and enlightened elite, of course. Like I said, it's about everything and nothing.